Welcome on the Leaders Who Care. Today we have the honor and privilege to welcome a passionate international change maker who creates positive and social environment change and scale through content, investment and technology. I have the privilege to welcome Profeta Johansson. Profeta, thank you for joining us today and welcome on the Leaders Who Care.
My pleasure, Marian. It's really an honor to be here having a discussion with someone that also cares. So I think we are on the same path and the same vision and the same journey and calling.
Thank you, Julia. I always say it shouldn't be a thing called the leaders who care. Hopefully every leader should care in the world. And if we can make ourselves obsolete, will be fantastic. And in terms of a podcast and really more leaders aspire to this. In the meantime, would love to bring those stories, those real examples of people that make the world a better place. And we've followed you. We looked at the work you have been doing for so many years. So for the audience, we're on a mission to bring some of the most impactful and caring leaders from every corner of the world. And today we'll have the privilege to talk with Profeta Johansson about her story and her calling. And would love to dive into it and really to understand more about it. I mean, you have three names, Julia, Profeta, Johansson. How do you prefer? What's your favorite one out of all?
Call me Julia. So well, I think my name reflects a lot of like who I am and where I'm coming from. I think the Profeta is still like my maiden name. And it's Italian. It tells a lot about like who I am as a person. And the Johansson is from my husband. So this connection of, you know, like merging the Latin American, Italian blood with Scandinavian, it's a little bit of like the joke that sometimes I do. But I do like to be called on a first name basis. I think it's, if you care, you have to be person Great. To person, heart to heart.
Great. Well, thank you for that. And Julia, tell us more about how did you arrive to where you are in terms of your passion? Because most people are searching of what they really want to do, what their calling is in life. And I know that's one of the most difficult ones to really identify what we're here for. We all have a mission, but not often people get to it. And you're right in the center, you're thriving, seeing the fruits of what you're doing is exceptional. So how did you get to that calling? I'm sure there's a lot going behind, you know, to arrive where you are.
I would say it's a journey, and it's the beauty of the journey that matters at the end of the day. And the calling can also take different shapes and forms through our lives, right? So I was born in Brazil and I lived in France, here in Germany, in the US, back and forth. As I just said, I even got married to a Swede. And my passion has always been like music and arts since I was like a small kid. But having been born in Brazil, it's not really like the place where you thrive as a musician or as an artist, you starve, right? So there was always this back and forth with my family of, who am I and what can I do? What are my skills and all of that? And when I was ready to go into music university, my dad told me like, no, you won't be doing that because otherwise you will starve. You have to do something that is, you know, relevant in life that people will pay you for. It's like, wow, what am I going to do then? You know, am I going to become an ambassador or a business person? I'm going to study law, engineering. And essentially, that was the beginning of my detour in life, I would say. So I ended up studying business and I went into banking. And slowly, I was like really getting detached of who I was because I had always been doing like volunteering and working with music, very engaged in my church community. So my religion plays a big role in who I am and what I believe and where I'm going. And at 25, I had a burnout. And when I had this burnout and I was working banking, I was like 2 weeks in hospital. I saw my mom really crying when she looked at me. It's like, oh my God, my daughter is leaving us. And that really made me rethink everything, you know, and I really wish that people don't have to go to that extreme, but these things, they do happen. Because I wasn't taking care of my heart, my soul, and my body at the end of the day. We just think we are superheroes, but we're just humans at the end. And that's when essentially I started my whole rediscovery. What is wrong in my life right now? Where am I standing? What am I doing what I'm doing? And yes, I needed to earn money. I needed to learn. I needed to become someone. And banking was a great way to get all that. But I was always this kind of like weird animal in it. So it took me still like a year until I managed to get out of banking and I jumped into the private equity startup world. And I'm just like, okay, it's interesting. You know, we're like creating things and making things. And I am an entrepreneur and creator at heart. So whenever these opportunities arise, okay, let's do it. We can. But still, like, this was like this detachment. I was working with a group that has a very particular way of going about people that I don't really abide to. And I left and met Professor Muhammad Yunus, who was then like my introduction to this whole world of impact business and impact investment. So I said, wow, there is something that I can do that's not philanthropy with my skills and my talents that I've been like using already in the business world, but actually doing it for good. And that's actually when I started to like recuperate who I was and like my values and understanding like I can actually do something that is good for the world and not only for my pocket. And it's been like this process of over 10 years now, trying to bridge this gap of the mainstream and the impact world, that there is something else that is we can actually use and engage our tools to spread hope and love and make really a positive change in where we're living while also making a living, right? I think everybody is interested in still like making a living, paying for their bills, and that's very important. And still, I was always like in this search, like, what's going to be? And that's why I say it's the journey, because you might be in your calling for some years, and then suddenly you just feel like, well, maybe I'm outgrowing this calling right now. And it can take different shapes and forms. So I have been like very happy doing like only impact investments. I worked in a venture capital fund, only focus on that. And then we moved to Germany 7 years ago. And I continued this whole path of like, how can we help structure ecosystems that believe in the same things that we are like believing. So I worked helping establish the ecosystem of impact in Brazil. And then here in Germany, I created a network of women, connecting women like globally as well around the topic of impact businesses, investments, and trying to always preach out, so to say, on there is another way of doing things. We need more women at the table, that's for sure. And we need more women that have the boldness of also facing the way we have been doing business for the past 100 years. And back and forth, I ended up like founding a startup. That's how actually we got connected as well, right, Marian? And trying to use more and more capital and technology and scalable solutions to tell more people and more businesses that there is a different way of actually creating impact. And for me, my personal theory of change touches on three pillars, right? Technology, capital, and knowledge, content. And for me lately, content has been like the main focus over the past year, year and a half. How can we go into the entertainment industry and really shape more storytellers that believe in hope and joy and love and really spread that? Because if we want to really make everybody change and everybody move towards like the same direction, it's culture. It's society's pulsing vein that is like watching the films and listening to the music. So we need like also these people to look into this direction. Otherwise, there's like no way that we can achieve the 2030 goals, which are around the corner by now. And like now, I've been like fighting my calling and my passions because I always thought, oh, can I actually like make some money with it? Or is it just going to be a hobby? And luckily, I've been, you know, like for good and bad, through traumas and all of that, which I'm happy to explore more if it's interesting, going back into like, what are my passions? And, you know, and music and storytelling are like definitely the ones that really have been getting my attention the most. And yeah, so I've been like composing and working executive impact producer for feature films as well. And Yeah, very excited to see that there is this opening of something that is also new for a new industry.
That is very exciting, Julia, and I really relate a lot to the one of these key pillars of the entertainment and really content, if you like, because even from the olden times, they always was an area of entertainment. That's how, and it's so important what people listen or they look into, and finding hope, finding really. That inspiration is key to the kind of content, to the kind of inspiration, because there's so much content out there that actually is
Yeah.
not very good for us. If anything, it's just brings people down without realizing. I mean, it's just a lot of, it's like we should guard our brain and guard what we watch, right? As much as we got our health. And that is very impactful and exciting, but it's not easy, I guess, because this is. Like, how do you? Well, it's getting easier, I guess, now with the media, but everybody's producing content. And how do you differentiate? How do you go about it so we can reach more people and make it more engaging?
So, just before I jump into a straight answer to your question, I think that even the impact world, and like I'm talking because I've been there, like so many times we're pointing fingers. And by pointing fingers, we don't help anyone change, right? So I think like my whole approach to how we shape entertainment in a way that's more impactful is instead of you saying like you shouldn't be doing this, it's like what if? And that's where for me, like fiction has like a huge role into saying like we can create a better world. You know, we can like shape up something that allows scientists and engineers and you know business people to look, oh, the future can actually look like that. Instead of like doomsday, it's a hopeful kind of vision. So from like a marketing perspective, the best strategies are already out there. We have like so many tools. We have like social media and all of that being used for bad. So what if we use all of that for good? And like my approach for entertainment for good actually goes around creativity still queen, you know, like you won't just like shape something up because of the impact. So it's slightly different when you talk about entertainment for good or startups for good, because startups like, oh, hey, I have a problem. I need to solve it. And that's how I'm going to be doing it. As for entertainment, you need to preserve the art. You need to preserve the inspiration because that's what entertains and makes people really excited and engaged and really like moving towards something. So essentially, there is like a great idea. How then you look at a script, for instance, and say, well, from whose perspective are we telling the story? Do we have the right people around the table to tell those stories? Do we have the right partners to carry this through? Do we have the right support for the cast, for the crew? So it is like this holistic approach. And I'm actually like working on an article that is going to be ready pretty soon on disclosing like this impact framework that I created for entertainment using Barbie as an example. You know, and so like, what if all these big blockbusters were actually intentionally driven by impact? So you don't take the fun out of it, but you really like put a few things and a few building blocks that you can then use later on and create sound impact strategies and impact campaigns to get the conversation going, to engage the audience in a different way, to reach audiences that not necessarily would be the first go-to for distributors and sales agents and you name it within the film industry. So to differentiate oneself and having like the vision and the purpose really clear also makes it so much easier to bring others on board, be it talent, right? So within the film industry, it's all about the package. Who's going to be like the protagonist? Who's like the main actor or the director, the screenwriter that's going to jump on board? And what we see repeating itself, not only in the startup world, but also in this realm, is that if you have a meaningful story, and if you have you're caring for your characters and for the topic, and it doesn't have to be only social impact, it can also be entertainment towards the environment, you know, you engage many more people because it's speaking to their heart. So you go right back to the why. Why would I do this story? What would I really like give my name and my time to make this actually happen? And then you see so many new examples like showing up and coming up and say, wow, it is possible for us to do something. And you have amazing production companies already doing part of like this content, but we just like need more. And as you said, like there's still like so much trash that we get exposed to every day.
What would be your advice to a lot of not only parents, but entrepreneurs, because you're making an impact right across? How could they guard their mind? How could they select the intentionally the kind of content they should watch? Because it feels like almost we're not in charge sometime, because it's just something we see, and the eye can look at many interesting videos, music, you know. How do you have any advice of what do you classify as a high quality content, something valuable versus just anything we see on the shorts or YouTube or any of those channels?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the whole impact world relies upon a little word called intentionality.
Yeah.
And this is essentially like the word that I try to use to guide my own life in different respects, right? So from what I watch to what I eat to who I relate to. And I think that sometimes it's hard because it requires energy, it requires effort. You have to really like put the work, but being intentional about like stupid examples like social media. Who are you following? Why are you following these people? Because once you click on something, you will get like the algorithm just like showing you like more and more of that stuff, right? So how do you curate your own following? How do you curate like the people that you surround yourself with? And do you just like sit on Netflix and you allow like the next, the next, the next? And what was like the first one that you watched? Or do you also like stop and say like, who are the creators that are creating stuff that interests me and it's fun? And at the end of the day, it makes me feeling better, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know, but there is a brilliant platform out there called Water Bear. And I've been like, you know, doing advertising for them like for free because it's a streaming platform that is free for use. And is that if Netflix had babies with Nat Geo? And essentially you have like a lot of like short format, and it's mostly documentary, but it's a lot of good content, and it's a lot of hopeful and joyful and like trying to teach people, quote unquote, because documentary is a little bit more in this direction, but like entertain in a way that you have impactful content at your fingertips, whatever and whenever you want. So what kind of streamers are you actually following, you know? And have you ever done any research on who are the film directors that you like and why do you like them? You know, what are they standing for? And who are the protagonists that actually stand for something that you relate to or not? And I think my big advice is be intentional, even when you're having fun. It might sound a bit boring, but I guarantee it's good.
Like you have to do your due diligence before, like, why am I watching this? Who's behind it? Because then you can see if there's anything else that is, you know, of this content. Because every content has certain purpose, I guess.
Exactly.
You want to know that you're not just being caught by just because it looks interesting and you don't need to question it. Like, what's in there for me? Why should I follow? What do they? What is the values of those producers, right? Do I relate to them?
Yeah.
That resonates.
If I might
so
say
well.
One last thing, it's very interesting that I know many brilliant artists who write and produce and direct like amazing stories that believe that a story it's just there to entertain. And I couldn't disagree more, because every time you tell a story, and it can be with your own brand, you're using a role model. You are creating a character. You're creating an arch that will give people data points in their, you know, even in subconscious on how to actually live. And it's not just entertainment. You are always planting a little seed with whatever it is that you're putting out there. So I can give you a little example, which is very sad. It's actually Bollywood. So Bollywood has this way of like portraying women and love relationships where the men are expected to chase the women, even if they're saying no, no, and no. It is like this obsessive chase after the woman. And at the end of the day, this becomes perpetuated in the mindset of like society that that's what a man is expected to do towards a woman. And then you have like all the absurds actually happening in that country because this permeates how men think towards women. And then it's just like being like replicated and replicated and replicated. And there are like foundations like trying to like fight this. It's like you have to portray differently. You know, it's not because it has been done like that for the past, I don't know how many decades, that you should continue doing these kind of stories. What if? So like, what if the storytellers were different? What if the behavior shown was different? And then you slowly can really like change society at large.
It's the patterns, right? And I think it's culturally ingrained. That's why nations or tribes or regions. Have you noticed why people ask you where you're from? Like, it's like the question that they why they ask this question is because there's a certain stereotype they put you into a box.
Oh, yeah.
Because and there's a probably a good reason for it, because certain areas, territories have their good things and bad things patterns that have been passed on to generations. Right? And this could be being careless towards a woman, being let the women do all the work and you just being lazy or just being unfaithful. And so there is a lot of those that are the negative, of course. There's a lot of positive. And I think what you're suggesting is regardless of where, which country you come from, which region, you can rise above the limitation of that region and not be defined just by where you're from or your beliefs or what historically things were done. Yes, you can honor the good parts of that culture, that region, but not accept or do not become part of the problem that is being passed on to generation. Be the bridge, right? Don't just
exactly.
Yeah, take everything for granted. And I think this is what you're really, that awakening. It's not easy because a lot of people would just say, oh, you're trying to change. People don't like to change. So they're resisting a lot of that. But when you go deeper, they don't know why. It's not serving them. It's not helping mm-hmm. community, not being really. And I think if really, regarding which country people come from or region, they can go above the limitations of that. They can rise. And this is a great message, what you're saying. You know, like just question it and take the best of it. That's it's very, very inspirational. And I honestly believe more and more, and I'm very hopeful for the next generation, Gen Z, that they're more conscious about the world. They're more questioning a lot of things. They have access to information. Of course, they have other challenges. Decision fatigue, right? This is coming with which part should I, which mountain should I climb? Where should I, what should I do? Because there's so much choice. So there's both pros and cons on having so much choice as well. And being a founder yourself, Julia, and really you have to wear many hats. Also, you have a family. What's the hardest part of the founder's journey? From obviously because of and also from your perspective. From really for women as well, especially because they have to raise a family, because I understand a lot of people promote more women in everything, but sometimes women don't want to be in the army, let's say, so you can't make the army 50-50, you know, just because you want to be equal, right? So it's like, and the other thing is, men cannot give birth. So as much as you promote women, you know, to take all this, the essence, and without women being mothers, the society is doomed. So we have no really
future. Yeah.
So whatever
wow.
people say, feminism, I'm respectful to all different points of view. But here, if we talk to the fundamentals here, you as a founder, entrepreneur, obviously wife, you know, you have all these hats. What is your take of the role of a woman in all of those areas? Is it possible to handle them well? How? Where's the boundary? What's the because whatever you focus, it grows. And then a lot of even the young women and considering not to have children because they're worried about the future, which is super worrying. So would love
well
to
thank
hear
you
your...
so much for this question. You really like got to like the place where I get like, you know, like I have to sit up in my chair. But I'm a feminist and I've been like a gender activist for years now because I had to man up to survive in the early days of my career, and I didn't have enough role models and representation to tell me that I could actually be different. So like through the years, I worked like in banking, in tech, in investments and startup. And it's a world ruled by men, by rules that work well for men and they don't serve women. And I always have this kind of tension, especially after I became a mom, with women that just want to replicate everything that men have been doing because, wow, literature, it's all written by men. All the examples, who's sitting at the boards, who has the money, who has the connections, it's all men. But it is a huge burden for society that we don't get this whole representation. We don't develop solutions that work for both genders at the end of the day. And we create extra pressure on women to perform like men do. And then men tend to see, oh, it is a burden to have more women. So let's leave them aside. Without like knowing and understanding the pure preciousness for business to have this feminine and masculine at the table and a different perspective. So like diversity is a win-win. And I have a lot of articles on this topic that for me is all about like the gender balance. And as you were saying, what's the limit of the 50-50? And I even have like these discussions with my husband, right? And I am married to a Swedish. Imagine if I was married to a Brazilian. But I would say that I've been always very ambitious, very vision-driven. And I love creating. I am always, you know, working at my limit because I love to work and to create. And then I had a startup with 35 people, fundraising, issues here and there, because when you're a founder, you're dealing with issues the whole time, right? And I had a baby. And the baby doesn't know that you're actually like fundraising, doesn't know that you have 35 people on your payroll, doesn't know like anything, right? And I decided that I wanted to breastfeed and I wanted to be there for her while also like doing the founder role. And it started to become very tricky because then you're not fully yourself one way, not fully yourself the other way. And it's, I have to confess, it's still like a struggle for me because now my daughter is 2.5 years old and I feel very productive. I've never been as creative as I've been for the past months. And at the same time, I'm always practicing balance on my own life. So they say that you can have it all. And I love what Oprah says, that you can have it all, but maybe not at the same time. And it is very frustrating because they make you believe that you can have it all at the same time. And what will that cost you? It will cost your health. So I really love your take on care, which is caring for yourself, but also caring for the others. Because, and I've been like telling my entrepreneurs like over the years, like if you don't take care of yourself, there is no impact, especially for impact-driven entrepreneurs, right? Because like it's the impact. But at what cost? If you're gone, there is no impact. There is no company. And I've been on the verge of like burning out again and again because that's my essence. That's my personality. So I needed to develop like different kind of like check-ins with myself and also with the team at different points on saying, where are we standing at? You know, are we creating the right metrics? Are we creating the right targets for ourselves? And here comes also like my whole criticism around like the VC world and the hustle culture of startups in ways that we create unhealthy ecosystems. And when you go back to some of like the biggest like creatives in the past or through history, things don't come overnight. So I think we are creating these kind of illusions that we fall into these traps, and many people they thrive in these places, but maybe is it your personality? Is it your stomach? Is it your profile to actually go through that culture? And we don't have to be all the same. I also love the zebras movement. I don't know if you know them, comparing the unicorn race or the zebra experience, where not necessarily you need to be on this crazy chase of a unicorn where you're just like creating smoke at the end of the day. It's very lonely. It's always like far off. It's about like the competition. What if we had a different way of building companies? So it is. And for me, then I will like tie back to this story of like entertainment, which is like changing mindsets at scale, because we need investors to change their minds. We need entrepreneurs to change their minds. Employees, what they are looking for, what they are supporting, you know, what kind of like leaders they're also seeking. And it goes a lot back to responsible leadership and caring leadership of saying like, where until where can I go? And what are the different seasons that you're living through? And then to go back to the topic of like women, I think that right now I'm in a season where I can't and I don't want to work 20 hours a day. And it should be fine. Right? It should be okay that we say that there's a phase in our lives. Even if I have like a very supportive like husband, that he also understands that if I want to have a career for the long term, I need to continue investing. So he will have to chip in. But right now, I cannot take 10 projects at the same time. I have to learn how to say no. I have to learn how to prioritize. And I used to remember like some women telling me, you become a better leader when you become a mother. And it's like, nah, come on, no, that's not possible, right? But there's like so much that really goes hand in hand, because prioritization is of essence. Survival is of essence. Negotiation and not manipulation, but you know, just like steering people that you really learn in a different way. But that comes at the cost, quote unquote, of maybe going slower. And I think it's still like a process that I'm preaching to myself that it is okay to sometimes go slower, so that you can go further, right? And for us women, I know that not every woman is the same, and I do appreciate all the women that are like making and conquering and being like, you know, like a full speed while also doing other things. I would say that like for myself, I am realizing that like my kids will only be that small for a very short term, and I want to be there and be able to pass on the right values for them as well, right? So I'm still like trying to maximize what I can do when they're like at kindergarten and then trying to be as present as possible when they are there, because I do believe in support. And I have to say, like, we also have like support, because it's not every day that I manage to pick her up from like kindergarten, but at least like 3 times a week, I want to be the one to talk to the teachers, understand how things are going, you know, what is she eating, how is she sleeping, how she's behaving with other friends, so that I can also steer that back home. And I think it's like one of the blessings that God gave us, even in the Bible, that it is to have kids, right? So, and it's always been like the struggle I had with my husband, that he said, like, if all the smart women decided not to have kids, what will happen to the population? So how do we create like structures that on one side support women but also support the family, right? There was like a very absurd statistics from the US where men had a harder time finding work after parental leave than women did. And that also doesn't contribute to the whole balancing act of creating a family where you need like the two figures, you know? So, yeah. I can like talk about this for hours, so but I'll cut it here.
No, that is very helpful because I love what you just say. You can have it all, but maybe not at the same time, because you need to appreciate the cost. And you're right. From parenthood perspective, we also learn that it's so important the first 7 years of the child, the first seven. I mean, every year is important, but especially the first seven. And that connection, that bonding, that really lead by example. You need more capacity. You need to free up time. I mean, if you think about it, what business leaders do or founders, they make an impact, but also they do it for money. So that means they give away their time to hopefully make a positive impact and earn money, right? But what if you look at the ultra wealthy often do, they'll give probably any wealth or any kind of money to redeem time. So the time is wealth. Health is wealth. So being healthy and having time to focus on raising your child is a gift. It's absolutely a blessing to have it. And sometimes we just run. So maybe, as much as possible, that you're right, prepare to whatever you can. And maybe that could be a push harder early on to hopefully create some independence or financial freedom to allow you to take that time, to allow you to do choose the projects you want to be with and who you want to do it and when you want to do it, right? This is like this is the freedom that you can get. I think that will help a lot to mentally be present and not having to worry what's going to happen if I don't show up, if that doesn't happen. And the other thing is a topic that I'm deeply passionate about, which is I haven't seen a great company or exceptional company or founder without a great and exceptional team. Really that balance between giving your team ownership but also being hands-on yourself as a leader and a founder, of course, how do you balance this? How do you really give your how do you develop your team while you're growing the business and balancing your personal life? What is your take on this?
I think the most important thing that one can invest into is the hiring process. It's like dating at the end of the day, right? And it was very, very interesting. We developed different ways of assessing people, but bringing to the core, what are the values? Who is this person beyond what they have done? How can you also have reference calls and all of that? That really give you a little bit more comfort, quote unquote, because you will never know. How do these people actually behave instead of just only what they deliver? And at the beginning of the relationship of this employee employer, how do you make sure that you're just very clear about the vision, very clear about the values of the company? And that you bring the people that can really say yes to this. Because as they say, we should be hiring people for their potential, not only for what they have done. So you will never really know how they will develop things. But if they're committed to the vision and they can abide by the values of the company, it is already a great start. And then really investing time into this steering process at the beginning always proved to be very fruitful for us, in a way that they are there asking their questions and you will show up. So we created a couple of check-ins during the first months of employment where people could actually have access directly to the founders and not only to the direct bosses. So that you continue creating this rapport and say we are like a team. Yes, there are the founders, the C levels, etc. But it has to be sort of like this equal or open door policy where you allow people to feel comfortable in asking questions. Because if you don't allow them to make question ask questions, it means that they will start building up fear, insecurity, and just starting to do things that will most likely get away from the vision of the company. And for me, whenever I have people working directly with me, I always try to have at least like 15-minute check-in like every week. Hey, how's it going? You know, what's cooking? You know, like how's your dad doing? I know he was going through a surgery. That must be very hard on you right now, because these things are elements that really people bring to the work. We cannot really divide ourselves and say, that's me at work and that's me not at work, especially we get, because so many of us are doing like home office, that these things get even like more blurred. So I think that the caring aspect for the individual, just beyond the position, is super relevant. And as you start like doing more things with them, they also understand how you think, and they can also learn with that, or even like tell you you're doing wrong, you could do it better in that other way. And slowly they take it on. And you need to empower. And I think it's like one of like the most difficult things is like step away from not micromanaging, because at the end of the day, as a founder, you will take on all the liability on your back. So it's very hard not to micromanage because you know everything that can get back at you later. But they have to feel that they're like also a bit owners of that business. Otherwise, you won't take like the most out of them, and you won't take what's most important is like the passion for it, because then you want to have people that will just like be passionate about it in a way that they will hire the next people just as well as they were hired. And then you can really make it like more sustainable, because at a certain point, it gets very hard for a founder to do like the whole interviewing process. So you must get it right at the beginning so that you have the right people to continue scaling when you're like reaching another point of dimension, right?
That is, I really relate a lot to that because of my own experience and best practice. We helped a lot of organizations transform, turn around, number of scale-ups to reach significant success, not, you know, even beyond unicorn. And it's absolutely key and instrumental, that process, that ability to attract the right and re attract and retain the right talent. And that is really difficult often for a founder to find the time, because this, I don't know when I'm going to have a business, I need to fundraise then. But at the same time, when you fundraise and you got the funding, then you got to hire quickly because the fundraisers are pushing you to grow quicker. And if you haven't prepared for that, or haven't identified on or really developed a relationship with exceptionally gifted talent who cares about you, the care comes with the values, then you're very likely to make mistakes, because they're not waiting for them to just be called for you, for them to be joined. So you need to really develop those
Yeah.
relationships. Have someone do it for you, like we often will do for founders and CEOs and leaders, because they just don't have the time. But it needs to be very well, this is one of the best investments you can do for your team. How did you do it, Julie? What was your system, if you like? I love that you talk about the assessment of the values. Did you have like time that you've dedicated to talk to people, meet people before? How did they come to you? What was the process you followed, just to dive a little bit deeper in that and help out others
Sure.
that are going through the process?
Yeah. So we had a VBI, a values-based assessment interview right at the beginning, and that would be like the first gate for any hire, regardless of like the position. Of course, that when you go for like more senior positions, normally it's like education, you get to know people and so on and so forth. But we made everybody go through like the same process and answer the same questions. So that we could actually go into like the more technical phase, right? So like VBI would come first, then followed by like an HR interview, then followed like by the hiring manager, and then at the end would come like the founders. And depending on the role and the position, it would even be like me and my co-founder actually like interviewing the person, because we needed to make sure that we had like the two sides of the coin being represented and passing that on to whomever would come on board. So I would have like a few like fixed slots on my agenda that were just like focused for like interviewing, and then you block that, right? So I'm a very visual person in that sense, where if you look at my agenda every week, every single block is already there. You know, it's just like there is some room for like serendipity. But mostly I know exactly what's going to happen in my days through the week, and then I can also like shuffle blocks around and all of that. But if you don't do that also for your team, you will never have time. And meaning, yeah. If this is priority, it will have like less time for other things. It's just how it is. But by understanding like that, the people will be able to leverage your work, then you understand it's like investment of time. And I think that we did like many mistakes at the beginning of new, like adjusting the process. And I would say that's like it's a foolproof kind of process because we're still talking about people, right? And I think it's like the beauty and like the challenge is that some people are actually like very good at interviewing. And then after like a few days, just like, oh yeah, you nailed the interview. You got us really to believe.
How do you really find those that are real and the ones who are very good at interviewing versus in performing?
You have to keep your ears open and continue like the conversation, not only with the person, but with the team as well. I like to give very clear goals and targets that have to be like delivered that are feasible to be done at a short period. And then you get to understand like, how does the person work? Is it really like abiding by what they said? You allow them to have like some interactions that you also have access to. So you get like to proof. And what is very hard, and then I rely a lot on gut feeling, I have to say, which is like, if someone is like really not working and you have like a feeling like, well, I won't have enough time to correct route, you need to let the person go for both parties' benefits, you know? And at the end of the day, what we have still like to understand, a company is a company, it's not a family, right? And many people try to sell, oh, we have a family. Even if you have a caring culture, you're still talking about a company. You're still talking about like a way of doing things. You're talking about like objectives that have to be reached because you also have like money that is at stake. And so it is a team, but it's not a family, right? And even if you're like the most caring leader, at a certain point, you cannot mistake be caring with being conniving and with just like being like, well, like, no, let's get another chance. It's different. These are different things. And mostly, I think you will hire people for their potential. And many times you will like fire them for their behavior, right? And I think these are things that are painful. Because whoever, you know it, right? When you hire someone, you're putting a lot of like expectations and passion into that. And it's like, oh my God, no, it didn't really work. But we need to like learn how to view these things like quickly. And I think it's like experience will also teach leaders a lot, right? So if you don't go through the process a few different times, again, it's not like logic 1 + 1 = 2. It is people management at the end. And you know it better than me.
Thank you, Julie. That's really helpful. And absolutely, this is one of the most important investments any founder, any leader can do, really to bring that, to create this effective and caring team that really makes a difference. They can care for each other. They can have the loyalty. The values, as you say, how they behave. I always want to see people, how they behave in difficult moments or problems. That to me reveals a lot how they reacted, because everybody will perform on the good times. I want to see how people perform in the stressful, difficult, challenging times. And for me, that is really important. And of course, to your point, values really, really matter. A gifted rebel is not enough. It could cause a lot of damage. Also, if you just care a lot, but you don't have the skills and the ability and the gifts, it's just not going to work, especially when you drive a business, you want to grow and scale. So you need both. And I'm very inspired of what you just, the value-based assessment that you've developed. And I think that is really important. So my message is also to invest, because attracting exceptionally gifted talent really, is absolutely a differentiator, can make the difference between exceptional growth, exceptional innovations, and not. But there's also a lot of risks associated with this as well, and you can minimize a lot of that by investing in those assessments. And sometimes you may assess someone, but they may be a superstar, but you may not have had a good assessment as well. So it could be the opposite of somebody who interviewed well. And we are, I believe it, that, having more people interview and having different assessment tools is important, because somebody who is neurodiverse and dyslexic, you put them through a strengths finder for 20 seconds, fast answering question, they will not perform well, but they could be absolutely exceptional for your team. So I think it's really important to have that well-rounder. And but now coming back to you, how do you take care of yourself? What is your way of showing up, having the energy? Because you're right, if you're alive, full of, you can't give something you don't have. You, as to your message of taking care of yourself, and if you die, you'll not be able to fulfill your vision and mission. So what fills your cup? How do you take care of yourself?
For me, sleep is number one priority. And that's where I suffered like the most, I would say, or I still like suffer, like weeks when the little one's not sleeping well, just like the next day, so, oh my God, how can I be a good person without good sleep? But like as much as I can, I try to really prioritize my sleep. I have a daily routine of Bible reading, journaling, and exercise. Even if it's for 15, 20 minutes, I do this every day. And maybe it's not going to be in the morning because I'm not a morning person, so sometimes it's hard. But I will like squeeze into my agenda through the day, making sure I cover these things. Because if I don't do it, I know people will feel it. My husband will feel it. My daughter will feel it. And my projects won't be as good as they could actually be. So this is something that's very important for me. Another thing is allowing time, or creating time, most likely, for creative outlets. I'm just like a creative person, and like my main creative outlet is music. And sometimes I need to make music that is not related to a project. You know, I have to do something that is like totally from inside and not from outside, or trying to create identity. It's just like allowing my identity to flow out. And this is very important. And trying to create these moments, even if it's not like the perfect moment of, you know, your artistic kind of date with yourself, but making these more often than not, even if it's with your family, with friends, or with like coworkers, you know, like a walk and talk instead of just like having another Zoom call, if you're like in the same location, but you know, exploring like nature. I connect so much with nature, and that really like fills my cup. You know, sometimes I won't have like 2 weeks to go somewhere, but maybe I do have 3-4 days that we can be by the beach and recharge. So these are little things that I try to squeeze and not like let myself go over like 6 months without a mini holiday at least, because I know that I will get to my limits and then it won't work well. So these are like little mechanisms that I learned how to integrate into my routines. I even have a playlist to get me going to my flow of the day. Again, I'm very musical. So like music is like my language. And community. I think having the right people around me also allow me to fill up my cup. I am an introvert. You might think not, but I am an introvert. I need my me time and my alone. That's how I really like recharge. But I make sure to be in the right communities where I know I have peers and I have people that have the same beliefs and the same vision. And even if they're not doing exactly the same thing, which is actually a healthy thing, they can give inputs into your own life. And you can have this exchange on a frequent basis where we just like reconvene and people allow you to, you know, let the steam off. I also do therapy, by the way. But allow you to just like share what's in your heart and also receive what they have to like bring back to you. And these, I learn more and more with time to be also very intentional about like who are the people that I let into my circle, and who I just like block and say, you have like limited exposure because it doesn't really fill my cup.
No, I really relate a lot to that. This is so important. I know spirituality plays a key role in your life. How does that help you, you know, to be where you are?
It guides me. it's the vision as it's like the calling. I think spirituality for me has always been very present. especially during my teenage years, I questioned a lot until I really like found my path. But as we would like discuss briefly, looking at the biggest leader of all times, the biggest like servicer ever, which is like Jesus, allows me to reconnect and like keep me in check that it's okay to not be perfect because no one will ever be perfect. And I think this is like one of my biggest challenges is like my perfectionism, which can sometimes be very detrimental to development of like any creative projects. But like being able to like reconnect and say like I'm here for a purpose and I have a calling. And sometimes I don't hear it like very clearly, but I have the faith that in the end everything will work out because it's all about my character. It's not about what I'm doing. And sometimes as an entrepreneur, that's very frustrating. I'm the personality type that I'm a doer. I want to see things happening. And it's very humbling. And that's where spirituality is so important that I remember that I am in a different realm as well. And I have a different kind of objective in my life, which is not only like getting things done and producing, but actually how do I allow myself to be transformed by this bigger love? And how do I learn how to love? And at the end of the day, the situations I'm going to be placed in, they're all about the people that I'm going to be meeting, you know? And it might be sound like crazy sometimes for like the business world, but you should be doing things because of the people. And of course, you have your calling, your skills, your talents, and then you're going to employ them in different ways. But is there like one person that I can make feel better today because of like our interaction? Is there like one person that I'm helping with the business that I am creating? And did I learn to overcome my pride? Did I learn to overcome my selfishness? Did I learn to love a little bit more? And because sometimes in the life of an entrepreneur, you have like so many failures and you learn so much with them. And it's so humbling. And it's like did anything good come out of this experience? And if you remember that it's all about the people that God places in your life, it's like, you know, it was a success in that sense that you did what you had to do with the people that you needed to be with at that point in time. So I think that if I don't connect with my spirituality, I lose this frequency, and then I get lost in whatever it is that I'm doing. So that's why I need to have like my daily practices. Like this year, I'm going through the Bible like from beginning to end chronologically, and it's like it's going to be a commitment, you know, and it's investment of time. So meaning, if I'm doing this, I'm not doing something else. So like, I'm reading like less books or business books or whatever it is because I have this commitment, but I know that this will pay off in eternity.
And I know, and I relate a lot to this because most of those books that we see that are really good books, often are just based on a very small part of the Bible. So, for any of us, our listeners that are listening, if you ever decide to read the Bible, that's really one of the most incredible book of all times. It's there's so much wisdom there. It's
So
you know,
much.
if we ever look at the promises, I always call the three P's. What are the God's promises? There are more than 3,800 of them, and God will never say something he will never do. So that's important because if you pray, you want to connect your prayer to the promises, and that's the integrity. Then the principles how to live an effective life. Like for example, if you want to be rich and successful and healthy, there's certain principle you need to follow. One example is giving opens the door of receiving. If you want to actually have more, start giving more. That's just the principle. If you want to advance in your career, start honoring people for their gifts. And dishonoring is the faster way to go down. Arrogance is the same thing, which is what you mentioned about the humility that keeps you grounded. There's so much wisdom. And of course, the prophecies, the 3P, you know, that gives you the stories of all those kings, tells you what are the consequences of the actions you might take and to discern what to do and what not to do. So I really relate a lot to that, and I think it's just so incredibly important. It gives me, for me personally, light. You know, it's like almost you switch on the light, you know, when you have this understanding. So thank you for sharing that. Final question: what are your hopes, wishes for the future generation? If there was no limit to you, what is one thing perhaps you would like to change in order to spread the care culture and make a better place.
I would really wish that this is a generation coming up that is intentional about what they're doing, recognizing all the privileges and the challenges, and that we all understand that everyone has a little part to play in this big story called life of, and humanity. And if everybody does their little part to make this more joyful and more hopeful, we can really see more love and peace. And that's, for me, like, it's really like a future where these things are what we want to live for, instead of just like having this position of it's all doomed, what else can I do? Empowering ourselves and saying, like, you have a special role to play here. So use the time wisely.
Julia, thank you so much. Blessings to you, your family, your team, and everything
you
do.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you very much. And thank you for being a leader who truly cares and for all the positive impacts you do. And once again, it's been absolutely an honor to have you.
My pleasure, Marian. Thank you so much for your time and for this amazing conversation. May God bless you all as well.
Thank you.